Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Casey Coleman, former Chief Information Officer with the U.S. General Services Administration. So, Casey, you are a recognized and effective user of social media. What are you doing to encourage the use of social media to improve federal government services and operations? More specifically, how are you using Web 2.0 and social networking capabilities to make mission support more efficient?
Social networking is really the way that our constituents and the American public looks to interact with government going forward. And I think all agencies are recognizing that. And we were early on one of the first agencies to create a social media policy. So this was perhaps 4 to 5 years ago. We created a policy to encourage the appropriate use of social media. So one of the things that we created is the idea, or didn't create, but articulated in our policy, the idea that there is a professional you, a professional self, and a personal self. And that in engaging on social media, you should be very clear whether it's in your personal role or your professional role. And for people in roles like mine, there's not a lot of distinction because your personal self and your professional self kind of blur in social media worlds. And so you always need to be aware of the implication that you could be speaking in a formal capacity and not ever overstep your comments online. So we did a lot of training around that. We have done an enormous amount of social media work particularly in partnership with Dave McClure's organization at GSA, the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies. They run the USA.gov portal, and they do a lot with blogging, with RSS feeds, with online chat with the American public to help them find access to goods and services or services and support programs that the federal government provides. And throughout it all, we've learned a lot of lessons about how to use social media effectively and how to create the proper tone. And one of the key things that we've learned is you have to be engaged. You cannot put up a blog or a Facebook page or a Twitter feed and let it sit there unattended. If you're not engaged in a two-way conversation, not just posting information, but responding, then you will not be viewed as effective in that world. So that engagement and conversation and willingness to carry on a conversation in that platform, in that framework, is vital. It's a much more connected conversation. It's a much more authentic conversation, I think, than some of our more formal channels.
So the give and take is very important. Social media networking platforms allow you to do that. But I also want to switch to how you protect those assets, and more particularly your IT infrastructure in general, from IT security threats, from cybersecurity potential threats. What did you do to secure your infrastructure, and what federal mandates did you have to pursue to do that?
Well, you know, FISMA sort of is the bedrock foundation that you start with in terms of security, and agencies now are moving to continuous monitoring. FISMA is, the language of FISMA really is about certifying and granting an authority to operate for a system. So those ideas have kind of been eclipsed by the fact that we now have platforms and not standalone systems, but platforms that support lots of different systems. They're constantly evolving, and the threat is constantly evolving. So it's not enough to do a point-in-time review and then 3 years later come back to do a review. You have to be continuously monitoring and scanning those environments to make sure that they're secure. So we've created a defense in depth, a layered security set of protocols where we are securing the network, securing the authentication of the individuals, securing the data, scanning the databases, scanning the websites, and scanning the systems, the applications for cross-site scripting vulnerabilities or things like that, that could pop up over the course of the systems being adjusted and modified. And at the end of the day, it's really about the users and the data, because the devices and the applications and the servers, those things are all support and ancillary to the information and the users. And if those users are being diligent and watching, you know, their usage, and if we're securing the data, then we have a reasonable confidence that we can stay in front of the threat.
So I wanted to switch to cost savings. And what I mean by cost savings in an IT context is green computing or inculcating sustainability principles in your IT infrastructure. What did you folks do during your tenure in this area?
We have saved a lot of money and carbon footprint emissions by our move to the cloud. Oh, okay. there's a reduction of over 80%, we've estimated, in conjunction with our provider, have done a study of the server environment and the carbon emissions of our previous email infrastructure that we ran ourselves in a distributed network across the nation, and the move to the cloud, which is using a tiny sliver of that broader cloud footprint. And the carbon footprint emissions and the energy savings have been in excess of 80%.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's significant.
Yeah.
We're also doing a lot to virtualize. Where we don't move to the cloud, we will virtualize that environment. We will consolidate our server footprint. One of the things we're doing is moving away from a dedicated data center that we currently run in Kansas City. It's in the Bannister Federal Center. We are moving into the Stennis Space Center, which is a multi-agency facility, NASA, DOD, many other agencies involved there. And we are cohabitating or co-occupying that space center in Mississippi to get much more efficient about our data center. That's part of the data center consolidation initiative that the Obama administration has been spearheading.
Yeah, how is that going for you folks?
Oh, we're really proud of the progress. One of the things that marks GSA's infrastructure is we have a lot of very small facilities because of our role as the landlord, property manager for so much of the federal real estate. We have offices across, we have several hundred offices across the nation. And in many cases, they had a very small computer room that qualifies as a data center under OMB guidelines. So part of what we're doing is really taking that down to the most minimal connection to the internet and authentication services, and the rest of it will go into one of our core data centers. The benefit of that is that it really reduces this distributed footprint, allows us to operate much more effectively, more securely, use a lot less energy, modern devices rather than old servers that no one ever took time to replace because they were running such a minimal set of services that they didn't get enough attention. So this is a much more robust and modern way to go.
So given the complexity and diversity of GSA's programs, it requires sort of a range of analytic techniques and tools. A, did you use analytics a lot in support of your mission? And B, what did you do, if you did, what did you do to enhance the analytic capability of the folks that work with you?
I think analytics is an area where we still have a lot of progress to make. But one of the areas I'm really proud of is in this doing this first round of consolidation that I mentioned, consolidating all of our infrastructure, commodity IT services, we really got a much better handle on how we're spending. It's really over $100 million a year on that sector of our IT programs. And we have a set of dashboards and a set of metrics on how much money we're spending on wireless devices, things like the help desk call volume, how well are we doing in supporting telework, how many people are connecting via telework, and what services are they using the most. Mm-hmm. And one of the success stories out of that is that very quickly after that consolidation, we came to understand through our analytics that we had a really ineffective wireless program. In fact, we had many wireless programs. People had their own wireless contracts that were dedicated to the support of that single device. And so they might go over, they might go under. By consolidating all that into a single pool of minutes with a unified contract and billing down to the individual program and individual employee, we saved several million dollars the first year, and we continue to save at least $1 million every year just from overage charges. So we no longer have anyone exceeding their plan. Mm-hmm. Now, some people use more, some people use less, but it all balances out, and we can manage that as a enterprise program.
Well, Casey, you've discussed terms like or concepts like big data, mm-hmm, or open data on your blog, and it's very insightful, I have to say. Would you define for us what these terms mean, and how are they at the forefront in government tech policy?
Big data is the next big thing. Okay. It is, if you refer to sort of the classic definition of big data, it really refers to information that's outside your corporate or agency boundaries. It's information that's out in the public domain, social networking sites, it's on blogs, it's in the internet ecosystem and accessible to you through analytics. And so the value in big data is that it allows you to tap into a much bigger ecosystem of information and to understand trends, to draw conclusions, to see things emerging before they're even evident. And one of the proof points that people sometimes refer to is you can go on to Google and you can see what people are searching for, and you can see where things, you know, like a flu outbreak occurring, people are looking for local doctors, or they're looking for what do flu symptoms look like? How do I know if I have the flu? And you can draw trends from things people are doing that individually don't mean much, but when connected into a group, you can see trends and patterns. And the ability to draw insights from that is important for the support services we provide at GSA and other federal agencies that really connect directly with the public.
And open data, what is...
Open data is fascinating. I'm very encouraged about the development of open data standards and the prioritization of open data. The federal CIO and OMB recently came out with the open data policy. And the idea there is really not big data in the sense of data that's outside our boundaries, but the data that we have. Federal government is a vast resource of information, important information, and it's contained in many different systems that really don't talk to one another. Mm-hmm. So the idea of open data is to create a common way to machine read that data, to aggregate it, and then to be able to draw value from it. So if you go on to data.gov, you'll see a lot of different data sets on things like geospatial information about where different government facilities are located. But when you can put all that information, all that geospatial information together, you can start to overlay it with, you know, here's what's happening from a weather point of view. Here's where our buildings are located. Here's where we have first responder capabilities. And you can start to draw an aggregated picture about how to respond effectively when a weather crisis, for example, hits.
That's very interesting. So your blog is chock full of a lot of fun and interesting ahead of its time kind of concepts.
That's why I call it around the corner.
Yeah, I love it.
What's around the corner? Not what's in front of us, but what's down the road.
And one of those contributions or one of those posts was around wearable technology and augmented reality.
You bet.
What is that?
Wearable technology is the next wave of computing. So we've gone from the traditional keyboard and mouse and screen to tablets gesture-based or touchscreen interaction. And we have now Siri and other voice recognition technologies that allow us to speak to our computers, and they can interact with us through the spoken word. Wearable technology is a next round of innovation that allows computing devices to operate based upon gesture and based upon sensors from your body, core temperature, heart rate, movement. One of the things I think I may have referred to in my blog is that I wear a fitness monitoring device that tells me how many steps I take every day. And I will tell you, if I'm at 9,000 steps in my goal, which is my goal, 10,000 every day, I'll walk a little further. I'll walk to the next metro stop down and get on one stop further just to get my quota of steps in. So wearable technology helps us to monitor our own goals and personal behaviors and fitness goals, but it also is becoming a tool for interacting with computers for those who may have impairments. One of the things that I think I referred to in a different blog is an exoskeleton, a wearable computer-based framework that soldiers can use to carry heavier loads, and it's computer-enabled to allow them to move freely, even carrying a load that, you know, normal human capacity would find difficult to shoulder.
And so putting your futuristic hat on, how are these technologies or advances helpful, or will they help federal agencies meet their mission?
Oh, yeah, no question. Two of the technologies that I find so interesting right now are robotics and 3D printing. Okay. And robotics is got a lot of application in fields such as healthcare. One of the areas of application is with the care of patients who are unable themselves to get in and out of bed or move about the facility, and robotics-enabled devices can help them move safely, you know, about their room or wherever they're being cared for. 3D printing allows us to quickly replicate parts, so replacement and spare parts, that's really not a concept that's operable today, but in the near future could allow us to quickly replicate parts for DoD type devices or things that need field support, that we have the, you know, it breaks down the supply chain so you can replicate the part right there at the point of need rather than backing into supply chain and ordering it 3 months before you need it.
Oh, I want to turn back to your efforts around the GSA Total Workplace Initiative. And how did your office or your function, mission support function, make it a reality?
So the Total Workplace idea is one that really combines the workspace with the workplace tools. And so it is, again, that any device, anywhere, anytime concept, but added to it is the idea that the furniture in the workspace is open, collaborative, it's movable, it is not fixed, and it's not your traditional office space. It is the future office space. And in the total workspace idea, technology is essential to enabling that to be effective, because it doesn't matter if you have everyone sitting in an open space if they don't have wireless technology, if they don't have voice over IP that lets them move about and their phone goes with them, if you don't have lightweight devices that people don't, you know, strain to carry about from point to point, those things, those concepts can't be realized. So technology has been essential to that total workplace concept. Another thing that we've done is to implement web conferencing so that we can now carry on a meeting and share slides. We can do video conferencing. We can see one another and we can see the material that's being presented from wherever we are. And we do hundreds of web conferences a day. And oftentimes you don't even know where your colleagues are sitting because it doesn't matter. The work is taking place regardless of where they are. It's what you do, not where you are.
So in an era of fiscal constraint, it's critical that agency leaders act with strategic intent to keep their staff and motivated towards mission achievement. Reflecting on your leadership at GSA, how have you kept your staff engaged in the face of sometimes very painful challenges?
I'd love to hear their answer to that question. I have sought to, again, be very inclusive, to give people opportunities and to trust them to go into a meeting with senior officials and to be the briefer or to carry the message and to try to give them opportunities in every case to excel. I always think if I have smart people who are doing a better job than I could do, that really makes me look good. And I have a great team and a fine group of leaders who are there running the organization. So, the mission, I think, attracts people.
Yes.
And people come into the government and they come into GSA for the interesting and essential work that we do and the opportunity to make a difference on a scale that's you can't replicate anywhere else. That's what drew me to government, drew me to GSA, and I think that's what motivates others. So it really is not just what I do. It's really the engaging nature and the important work that we do that I think keeps people excited to come to work every day.
How has the role of federal agency CIOs evolved? We will ask Casey Coleman, former Chief Information Officer within the U.S. General Services Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.